Views expressed and the opinions given by the individual hosts and their guests do not necessarily express those of KCNR Radio and its sponsors. All shows are independently owned and broadcast for entertainment purposes only. Readers and listeners are advised that neither KCNR Radio nor its owners and agents shall be held liable for the content of this program.
Kind of short and kind of square, through the foam in his mustache, his voice fills the air. Talking about a state of mind, son. Talking about the state of Jefferson.
All right, good morning, Jeffersonians. Hey, I'm your guest host today, Chris Kellstrom. Terry and Wynn are out doing Father's Day things. I think they're both in Fall River Mills. So anyhow, I'm here today with Bob Holsinger. He's going to be your guest host. Say hello, Bob.
Good morning, State of Jefferson. Welcome aboard, and happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there.
All right, yeah, happy Father's Day to everybody, and I'll be home later on today and hopefully enjoying some Father's Day's time, and happy Father's Day to those that have lost their fathers, too. So kind of a sad day for some and happy day for others and a little of both for me. So anyhow, so we got some things going on, a little court case action last Thursday, but before we get to that, we'll do a little bit of housekeeping. So we have Gary Zimmerman on the line. We will go to him in a little bit, but let's get some things out of the way here first. So tomorrow night, we're going to have a meeting down at 2570 Bonneview Road. Jefferson meetings start at 5:30. Regular meeting starts at 6. Again, it's 2570 Bonneview Road. It's a large building that may or not be a church, and if it is a church that has no name, it shall remain nameless. So anyways, 2570 Bonneview, we'll be talking about what happened on Thursday, what happened with our court case, where do we go from here, what's going on, what we expect, etc. So if you have some questions as to what happened Thursday, we're going to answer some of those today, and we will also answer some more of those tomorrow night. So we'll see you there. We just had a fundraiser on Thursday, the same day as our court date. Kind of imagine that. I'm sure that was just a mere coincidence, but the fundraiser had been scheduled for months down in Calaveras County. Brett Murphy and Leah and a bunch of people from Calaveras, as well as Tuolumne and Mariposa, they all put on a fundraiser at the Dodassa Ranch in Burson. They had a lot of great things there. They estimated that they raised about $8,000 that's going to go to our legal fund. So shout out to all of them. And a little shout-out to the other counties that have not had a fundraiser. Hey, you know, a little county like Calaveras on a Thursday night that happens to be the same day as our court case got moved to can raise $8,000. So we got 23 counties. I'm putting a challenge out there to the other dozen and a half counties that haven't really had fundraisers and haven't been doing a whole lot. Hey, let's get on the ball. Let's raise some money. We will be in the Supreme Court eventually, and it's going to cost some money to get there. So we're about halfway to our goal of $1 million. This $8,000 will put us up there right around $500,000. So let's get some fundraisers going. So in the meantime, we're going to go to Gary Zimmerman. If you guys have questions for Gary, you can call us at 605-4567. So, Gary, are you on the line?
Yeah, hi, Chris and Bob. Good morning, and happy Father's Day to you and the audience. It's Zerman, Z-E-R-M-A-N.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. I'll make a note of that.
That's okay, no problem. Well, again, good morning, and I'm here to talk about the hearing on Thursday up in Federal District Court, Eastern District, Sacramento, before Judge Mueller. The hearing was supposed to be on Friday, but about a week before it was changed till Thursday. That ended up providing a little bit of a difficulty to most of our supporters and plaintiffs to come there, and so that inconvenienced us a little, but I'm happy to say still the people supported us. About 200 people showed up, and they were out in front of court, and then we had also requested the larger courtroom. That's about the third time we did that, but the court has not given us that, so only about 40 or 50 people could get in there. And so I'm here to tell you what happened. Two matters were before the court. One was the defendant, Secretary of State Alex Padilla's motion to dismiss CFR, that's Citizens for Fair Representation, our client's second amended complaint, and that's to dismiss it with prejudice, which means that we couldn't amend it again. we vigorously opposed that. And then the other issue before the court, other matter, was CFR's request or motion to convene a three-judge court. We had previously done that when we filed our first amended complaint requesting the three-judge court, and Judge Mueller at that time acceded to that. Her order stated that our case implicated the special statute, Section 2284, which Congress has said these cases are so important that they should come before a three-judge court. And then the other provision of that statute is, that's really important, if you get an adverse ruling, you can go directly to the Supreme Court and they have to hear the case. Well, initially Judge Mueller withdrew her grant of the three-judge court. She sent it over to the initially to the Ninth Circuit Chief Judge, and then he's supposed to appoint two other judges, and then that was pulled back. So what I want to tell the audience is that the judge, after hearing oral arguments, took the matter under submission. She will issue a ruling, probably not right away, so don't anybody panic. We believe we made a really good record there, and two things can happen. Judge Mueller can rule in our favor, then we would get the three-judge court and be over there. Or alternatively, she can deny our motion. Again, we made a she can grant their motion to dismiss our complaint. We made a good record, and if that happens, we intend to appeal that. But the wheels of justice work slowly sometimes, so don't panic. We've got hope that we've got a really good case, and we're going to go forward to the Supreme Court. Now, let me address the motion to dismiss CFR's complaint. The Secretary of State is the arguments. One, that as plaintiffs, we have no standing. And that's a judge-made doctrine, and when you bring a case, you have to allege a specific concrete injury to the plaintiffs, and you have to establish that with facts. And the example is kind of sometimes people bring taxpayer cases that a taxpayer would say, I don't want my taxes going for a war that we're involved in. Well, that's kind of a general grievance that affects the entire country in the same matter, and there is no generalized grievance to the particular plaintiffs bringing that case. So the court would say, you don't have standing to bring that, and would dismiss the complaint. Our complaint here is different. We're alleging, and in our second amended complaint, we put forth facts showing that individual grievances existed, and particularly to each group of plaintiffs, and particularly based on California's founding 1849 Constitution and 1879 Constitution that had invidious racial discrimination written into the constitutions. And so those harmed people and affected representation from the beginning. That's what our suit is about, the lack of representation, because California, since it started shortly thereafter, as it initially increased the legislative members in the Assembly and Senate as population increased, but real quickly then they stopped doing that. And to bring us up to date, after they capped the Assembly and Senate at 80 members and 40 members in the 1879 Constitution, we've added 39.5 million people over 155 years in California, but we haven't added one more representative. And representation is so important, and that's why the legislature is placed first in the Constitution, because it's closest to the people. So although we have three independent co-equal branches, the legislature is first among equals. The legislature is supposed, particularly the lower chamber, is the pulse and the lifeblood of the people. That's how the people's will and power gets recognized as to what the people want to do. in both the federal constitution and California's constitution start out, we the people, meaning we're supposed to be sovereign, government is our servant. So we think we did a good job in our second amended complaint and at the hearing establishing that we have standing. Then the second issue that Padilla's motion to dismiss is raising is a political question. And what they're saying there is that the Constitution sets forth that the legislature will determine what the legislative bodies are. We agree with that in concept, and the legislature does have quite a bit of autonomy to do that. But what we're saying, at some point, like here, where it's been 155 years and 39 and a half million people added and no more representatives, that this reaches the point of willful neglect, that the legislature has abandoned their duty and is totally derelict, and it requires court intervention here. And for a long time, the courts would not intervene into this, and they called it a political thicket, and so it's for the legislature to determine, and the court couldn't intervene. But in a 1962 case called Baker versus Carr, involving the state of Tennessee, they hadn't apportioned the legislature again for 60 years, from 1901 to 1961. And at that time, what had happened is many of the rural districts' population had moved into the cities, and the rural districts had a lot more power and representation than the urban areas that had more people. And the court said, well, we've got to have apportionment that equals out these districts, and the court intervened there. In the case, it actually didn't, the Supreme Court didn't intervene. It said we have the power to do this and sent it down to the lower court to intervene. And then a couple subsequent cases, Westbury versus Sanders and
Reynolds versus Sims.
Reynolds versus Sims came up with a one man, one vote. And so right now before the court, there's another case called Gill versus Whitford out of Wisconsin, and another one called Bezenik versus Benesek versus Lamone out of Maryland, involving gerrymandering. And we're waiting to see what happens from the high court. It's been argued, briefed and argued, and any day now, this term, a decision could come down from the court. They've been all, were reluctant to get involved in political gerrymandering, but they've taken up these cases, and they may intervene, and that should into the political thicket again. And ours, what we're saying about our case is it's the Dred Scott and the Baker versus Carr of the 21st century. If you'll recall the Dred Scott case, Dred Scott was a slave who had moved out of the slave state he was in and was in a free state and was petitioning the court for his freedom. And a decision by Justice Taney, I believe it was in 1855, 56, said that Dred Scott didn't have standing because under the Constitution he wasn't a person. And if our case is thrown out, that's what we're saying. We're all like Dred Scott here. The court's saying that, you know, we don't have standing for our case. We're not people. And the other then is the Baker versus Carr case. Ours, because this issue of lack of representation where the legislature, who has the duty to portion and add more senators and assembly members, is totally neglectful, willfully neglectful in doing its duty. And one of our arguments is that, again, they have this duty, but they're reluctant to do it because they would be diffusing their own power, and that they're somewhat in a trust position or agency position, and they have to act in our interest. We're the principals, we're the sovereigns, but yet they're more selfishly thinking of their own power. So that's our argument there.
Yeah, and as far as the jurisdiction, as far as legislative or judicial on our you know, lack of representation case. I mean, the crux of the thing is it is a judicial matter at this point because the judiciary is the one that messed it up with Reynolds versus Sims and Baker versus Carr. You know, prior to that, we did have representation in the rural areas, and because of those two Supreme Court decisions going in there and changing the political model, you know, it's put all of our representatives into the same area. They're all in the big cities now, and we have no representation. So for her to say, well, you know, it's a legislative matter, well, yeah, it was back in 1964, too, but the courts took that away from us, so now we're asking the courts to put us back to where we were.
Right. Those courses, there was the thing, and we still have it in the federal system. It's called, like, the Connecticut Compromise, where each state has at least one rep and has two senators, so smaller states have representation. We think we should have, every county should have a rep or state senator, as well as at least one assembly member. And that's what's happened, is the courts, the legislature, and the executive departments are all kind of ignoring this issue. Another thing that's really important is the Federalist paper, I believe it's 69, states that all power resides in the people, and it's their will that government should always execute. But it said that the executive and the judiciary should be few in number and will be remote from the people. And it continued to say the legislature will be manied, varied, and amongst the people and will best know their will. Well, what's happened is when you cap the legislature and let the other two branches grow in leaps and bounds, what happens is they leapfrog over the legislature. Instead of the legislature being first, it's now at the tail end, and the court is becoming like supreme and imperial, as well as the executive, and the will of the people is being neglected. So we're saying we need to right that. And another one of our causes of action is that the Constitution guarantees a Republican form of government, and the way it is now, we no longer have a Republican form of government. But that's another area where the court has come in and said it's a political question. We can't get involved in that. Well, the court has to, as Mr. Staffney, my co-counsel, pointed out, that the court has equitable powers, and they exercise them in Baker versus Carr to right a wrong. And another one is Brown versus Board of
School
Education,
Board. Yeah.
1950s, mid-50s case that said that separate but equal is unconstitutional and ended discrimination in schools and other places. And the court intervened there, and we're pointing out to the court, this situation requires court intervention when the other branch refuses to do its duty.
Hey, Gary, will you be able to hold on for a break? I know Ashley's wanting to go to a break here, and this is I don't want to stop you because this is fascinating for me, but can you hold over for a break?
Yes, sure. Go
Fantastic.
Ahead.
All right, we're going to go to a break real quick, and we'll be back online with Gary. The time has come for 51.
Did you know that California was never supposed to be just one state? Before the state was formed in 1850, there was discussion of forming three states instead of one. California has an area larger than seven East Coast states combined, and it takes 14 hours to drive from one end of the state to the other. California is simply too large to govern. Rural communities are being outvoted by more densely populated areas. The state of Jefferson is the solution. Please visit SOJ51.net to show your support.
The average adult is issued 32 troopers that, with proper care and just a little discipline, should serve you well during your entire tour of duty on this planet. They're called your teeth. But when your platoon gets out of line, holes in the formation, or other problems, you need to call in an expert, like General, Dr. William Farrell, with decades of experience keeping those troops in line and executing their assigned duties properly and dependably. If you'd rather not be there while he reestablishes order amongst the troops, Dr. Farrell offers sedation dentistry. He and his highly trained staff will whip your troops into shape without any discomfort. And having served himself in both the Navy and the Marine Corps, Dr. Farrell offers special consideration to veterans. Let him take the best care of your platoon of teeth, and they will serve you always. Call 547-5757 or visit palosidrodentistry.com. At ease.
And for a limited time, Dr. Farrell is offering x-ray, exam, and cleaning for just $175. Call 547-5757 to schedule your visit.
Every Monday from 6 to 8 p.m., join us at Radio Wasteland, your local guide to the unexplained and the unknown. Each week, we cover all things unexplained, from the moving stars in the sky to the things that go bump in the night. Visit us as we explore these topics and more as our in-studio team digs deeper with featured guests and listener call-ins. Mondays are rough, but now your overworked brain has a chance for some sweet relief with Radio Wasteland.
Radio Wasteland, Mondays at 6 on KCNR.
The cats in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man on the moon. When you're coming home, Daddy, don't know when, but we'll get together then. You know we'll have a good time then.
All right, we're back. That probably wasn't a very smart move there. I asked Ashley to play Cats in the Cradle, and now Bob and I both have tears in our eyes, so... Anyhow, we're going to do our best here. So we have Gary on the line, and Gary has given us some great information, and I really appreciate that. Gary, I have a couple questions for you, if I may, if you're still
sure.
There. All right. This judge is claiming that after she granted us the three-judge panel, and I believe it was 2 days later, correct me if I'm wrong there, but I thought it was 2 days later, California filed ex parte motion, and she pulled back on that three-judge panel. Is that correct?
Well, correct, but it's a little more attenuated than that. What happened is we then opposed that, and she set a hearing, and then we never had the hearing.
Right.
And so, you know, we brought that up at the hearing that we filed a second amended complaint and then another request, and then when she didn't act on that request, we then filed a motion to find out why we don't have the three-judge court, and that was supposed to be heard on June 1st, and she vacated the oral argument and said she would determine that on the papers, and so then at the hearing we brought that up. We're standing on our rights, and we're demanding a three-judge court, and so that's one of the issues before her.
And now, did she say that basically it was brought to her attention, it wasn't in her purview or jurisdiction to grant us a three-judge panel, and that's why she pulled it back? Is that not kind of what she said, or in a roundabout way?
Well, she looked at it again. The statute's kind of simple, and there's a case called Shapiro versus McManus, a 2015 U.S. Supreme Court case, an opinion authored by now deceased Judge Scalia. In a unanimous decision, the court said that there's a Goosby case and there's a very low bar, and all the judge has to do is take a, like, an administrative look at the case, and under the statute 2284, essentially, what she's got to look at is, does it challenge a congressional state apportionment district? And then it's a low standard. If the case is then not frivolous or wholly not constitutionally insubstantial, and it's a very low bar, then these are the types of cases Congress wanted to be heard. And what's important is the judge did say that this case represents a very important issue, a very serious issue, and that was also stated by the Secretary of State's counsel, Deputy Attorney General Waters, that this is an important issue, a serious issue deserving of serious consideration. Although what they both then determined is that that's in the court of public opinion, and it's eventually a political question, and that's why she pulled it back. And we challenged her on that and said that we clearly met this standard, the low bar of Goosby and Shapiro versus McManus, because California's constitutional history is fraught with invidious racial discrimination. In fact, the legislature and the courts have expressly written apologies for this past discrimination, and under certain case law, the burden should shift to the state to explain that and how they're going to remedy it.
Now, a lot of us...
Moreover, some of it continues today, and that affected representation from the beginning. Then also, there are two points that we've raised in our papers that a guy by the name of Robert T. Monahan, who was the Speaker of the Assembly from 69 to 71, wrote a book warning his former colleagues, and it came out in 1990, The Disappearance of Representative Government, A California Solution. And he made several of the arguments that we're making, that this country was formed on the lack of representation. That's why we had a revolution. Patrick Henry said, no taxation without representation. Give me liberty or give me death. And then in the Declaration of Independence, it states that we've suffered a long train of abuses, and the king has refused to pass other laws for the accommodation of large districts of people unless the people would relinquish the right of representation in the legislature, a right inestimable to them and formidable to tyrants only. So that's one of the founding, if not the founding, principle of this country, and then our states are supposed to guarantee a representative form of government, so it would be attributed to the states that representation is a founding principle, and we don't have it. Clearly, our votes are being ever diminished when you have more population and a cap on the legislature.
Now, a lot of us from the outside looking in, you know, we all feel, I mean, we'll just say it out loud here, we all feel somebody got to her. I mean, somebody, after she granted the three-judge panel, everything seemed to be going smoothly, and she was appeared to be ruling along the lines of the law, as she should be, and suddenly, you know, she's vacating court dates, she's changing court dates, she's, you know, pulling back on the three-judge panel. It seems like she's got a hot potato in her lap, and she doesn't know how to get rid of it. Now, you know, my question is, if she's claiming that she now doesn't have the jurisdiction, or somebody informed her that she didn't have the right to judge a three-judge panel, well, a three-judge panel was granted to Abbott and Evanwell down in Texas, and a three-judge panel was given to Eugene Laverne. So how can she claim now that it's not in her purview or jurisdiction to that three-judge panel is a mistake that she gave it to us and she didn't have the right to do that? How do these other judges do that?
Well, you're correct. Many of these cases do get the three-judge court, and we're saying that this case implicates the statute for the three-judge court, 2284, and she found that herself. You know, we made a good record, and we'll see what her decision says. She did that, as you said, and she indicated that she thought that we didn't have – she argued back and forth, or she made statements back and forth as to standing and political question and non-just disability. The matter's under submission. She will issue a ruling, and so we don't know where that's coming. But we made those arguments, like you said. And, you know, this is an issue whose time has come. you know, you can just feel it. It's palpable. It's tangible that we don't have representation. And that's why the country, and particularly California, is having all of these issues like the Cal exit. And, in fact, she asked us a question regarding the three-way split that's now on the ballot. It's a guy by the name of Tim Draper who sponsoring that, got the signatures, and it's on the ballot to have the California split into three separate states. And she asked us, well, why doesn't that make our case moot? And we said the law is clear that although we have the initiative process, it harms individual plaintiffs, and they don't have to go that route. They can go to court. And so that's what we're doing. And so we'll have to see what her ruling says. Hopefully she'll rule in our favor. She'll reconsider our arguments, reconsider the law, and find that this case deserves a three-judge panel.
So let me ask you a question, Gary. If worst-case scenario, if she were to come back and say, no, I find it has no merit, I'm dismissing without prejudice, which I guess she said she's leaning to, does that mean that we would appeal that decision to the Ninth Circuit? Is that how that appeals process would go if she were to dismiss it?
Correct.
Okay, and that's
And then if they determine our in our favor, then they would send it back down to Judge Mueller and instruct her to send it over to the chief judge, and then he appoints two more. She would be one of the three on the panel, and then we go before them.
Yeah, somehow I don't think that the Ninth Circuit would rule in our favor.
Well, then our route is to the Supreme Court, and again, we have the Shapiro case, which is a unanimous decision that says that this is a very, very low bar, and that it's more of an administrative decision. It says that the court determines if the statute's implicated, no more, no less, and then sends it to the chief judge, which she initially did.
Hey, I'm glad you brought up
another point. I'd like to bring out is that what we've made in our arguments in our second amended complaint and the earlier versions is that in 1990 also, the same time that that book came out about the disappearing representation, is that the people had passed Prop 140, which was term limits. And if I could just read that, that was then turned into a constitutional provision after it passed, and that's in Article 4, Section 1.5. And this kind of parallels our arguments. The people find and declare that the Founding Fathers established a system of representative government based upon free, fair, and competitive elections. The increased concentration of political power in the hands of incumbent representatives has made our electoral system less free, less competitive, and less representative. The ability of legislators to serve unlimited terms, to establish their own retirement system, and to pay for staff and support services at state expenditure heavily to the extremely high numbers contributes heavily to the high number of incumbents who are reelected. The unfair incumbent advantages discourage qualified candidates from seeking public office and create a class of career politicians instead of citizen representatives envisioned by the Founding Fathers. These career politicians become representatives of the bureaucracy rather than of the people whom they are elected to represent. To restore a free and democratic society of fair elections and to encourage qualified candidates to seek public office, the people find and declare that the powers of incumbency must be limited. Retirement benefits must be restricted, state-financed incumbent staff and support services limited, and limitations placed upon the number of terms which may be served. Well, that was another measure in 1990, you know, apprising the legislature of these problems. And like the book of the former Speaker Monahan, largely this constitutional amendment has been ignored. Because what happens is once they are termed out, they run for other offices or are appointed to commissions, and we get the same people over and over again. And also the cap of the 80 assembly members and 40 state senators has essentially created an oligarchy, which, again, the Federalist Papers warn against.
Yeah, and one thing I think, you know, our Founding Fathers thought of just about everything. I mean, that Constitution 200 years later is just, you know, unbelievably, like they, you know, saw it forward in time. But I think the one thing they may not have seen was Article 4, Section 3, as far as we have to go to our state to get the right to form a new state. I don't think they ever saw a time when, you know, us out here would be in a situation where our legislature is capped, you know, 40 senators are representing 40 million people, and they're all in the same spot, you know, all in L.A. and San Francisco. And, you know, we are relying on having to get their permission to leave. And it's like how that may have been the one thing that they overlooked, that they never saw how corrupt things would get, that particular, you know, constitutional part.
Well, I believe it was Franklin was asked at the Constitutional Convention, what have you wrought, what have you given us? And he said to the lady, Madam, a Constitution, if you can keep it.
A republic, if you can keep it.
And I believe it was Adams said, this Constitution is for a moral people. It will serve no other. And liberty and truth require constant vigilance, and you have to stay on target. And what's happened is slowly, little by little, we've chipped away at the true meaning of the Constitution. And the Founding Fathers knew, they studied history, studied other forms of government, and they came to the conclusion that the biggest theory of power and application was, what good is it if we can't abuse it? Yes. And they tried to set up this government of three independent co-equal branches of government and checks and balances, and we've let that slip through our fingers.
Yep.
We used to have citizen statesmen, and now we have career politicians. The Founding Fathers were so courageous when they signed the Declaration of Independence, many thought they had signed their death warrant. These were courageous people, liberty-seeking people. And the first principle of this country is liberty. And many things that have happened that have taken that away. Our next first principle would be a limited government. Look what's happened. It seems like the federal government, there are no limits. It's a cancerous behemoth that just keeps metastasizing. And these larger states like California, Illinois, New Jersey reflect the same. And look at New Hampshire. They are a state of about 1 million people, and yet they have in their lower chamber 400 representatives. So for every 4,000 people, they have a representative, and that's true. That's a true representative republic then.
It's like a small city council.
The constituents in that district of 4,000 people, they know their legislator. Their legislator knows them. Their legislator knows what their will is and acts on their behalf. And real quickly, if they don't, somebody can run against them, plop down a small fee, go and get 2001 votes, and that person's out and the new person is in. And one thing that's a real problem with our elections, almost every election, we want to throw the in party out, and we do not necessarily want the out party in. That's the only choice we have between these two parties. And when you have these gigantic, you know, few representatives, large population, you have large districts, and these elections are not competitive. You have to have a lot of money, you have to have a lot of connections, and so essentially they are taking our government away from us.
Yep, it's been gone for a while. Hey, Gary, we're going to go off to one more break, and we have a caller on the line with a question for you. Can you hold over through the break?
Yeah, can do.
All right, fantastic. Thank you, Gary. All right, we'll be right back.
Did you know that Article 4, Section 3 of the U.S. Constitution lays out the framework for the state of Jefferson's plan to split California? A state can be formed from the land within another state if the state legislature and Congress approve it with a simple majority vote. 51% is all it takes. Your vote doesn't count in Northern California. California is broken, and the time has come for 51. Please visit SOJ51.net and donate now to show your support.
Tobacco and Brew has been a sponsor here on KCNR 1460 since we started the station 8 years ago. A long-standing Reading tradition, Tobacco and Brew is locally owned, backs our veterans, and does so much more for this community. It's located at 2143 Hilltop Drive. Check out their new lines, new products, new briar pipes, and of course, the famous walk-in humidor. Come in and see the newly remodeled Tobacco and Brew. 2143 Hilltop Drive, open 7 days a week.
Hi, I'm Sharon Clark of Home Helpers. It's amazing to look back at all the families we've touched since 2004, but our clients say it best.
I want to express my deep appreciation for the love and support you and your...
So fortunate to have an organization like Home Helpers.
You never know how much your contribution meant or how greatly you touched our lives.
Thank you so much for helping me care for my husband.
After hearing what it's meant to them, I truly can't imagine doing anything else. When you need help for your loved one, choose Home Helpers. There is no place like home.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
Welcome back, Jeffersonians. Hey, we still have Gary Zerman on the line. And for those of you that may have came in late to the show or whatever, Gary Zerman's our lead attorney on our court case against California. So he's been giving us some fantastic information, kind of letting us know what's going on and what to expect and what we've seen, and putting it in terms that even I can understand. So we have Jimmy on the line, and I think Jimmy's not on the line. Okay, sorry, Jimmy. We were kind of going there for a while, and we lost you. So, Gary, are you still there?
Yeah, uh-huh. Did you have his question, though? Or?
Well, he may have just called back in. I'm not sure, but we somehow dropped him. So, no, so for the time being, we'll just go back to where we were. So, she's pulled back on the three-judge panel. Did she ever give us a reason why or what her thoughts were?
Well, she said that despite the language and instructions from the court in Shapiro versus McManus, referencing this very, very low bar for these cases from the Goosby case, that she said we didn't meet it. She says we possibly didn't achieve standing, and that it is a political question. And then it's the third area in their motion is that the case is not justiciable. That's another judicial doctrine. And they say that they can't come up with manageable standards. What we pointed out, the court intervened in Brown versus Board of Education, and the court said act with deliberate speed, and they came up with requirements how to manage desegregation. That was not any more difficult task than this would be, demonstrated by Baker versus Carr, that entered into the political thicket, and there's been many cases on apportionment of these districts, and now you have Gill versus Whitford on whether they're going to enter the political thicket regarding gerrymandering and come up with standards. What we tell them is, well, look to the, we can come up with benchmarks. Look at the Constitution. It said one rep for every 30,000. Then there's Mr. Laverne's case versus the House of Representatives, which involves the real First Amendment. In fact, they were called articles when they were submitted to the states for ratification. And what had happened is initially we had the Articles of Confederation, and that didn't work because the federal government was too weak. Well, then we had the Constitution that was signed at the Constitutional Convention and sent back to the states to be ratified, And many states said, well, we believe the federal government is now too powerful, and we want some guarantees on the rights of people, and submitted these 12 articles, amendments, that came to be known as the Bill of Rights. Well, Article the First, to show you how important representation was, dealt with representation. It said that once we reach the point where there are 100 members in the House of Representatives, we'll go from one rep to every 40 people. Once we reach 200 reps, we'll go one to every 50,000. And so with Mr. Laverne's argument, he said that that Article the First, in fact, was ratified, and the Constitution says if it's ratified, it has to essentially be implemented. And his lawsuit is saying that several of these presidents that came in, should have recognized that the Article the First was ratified, and that's the original First Amendment, and that we should today have 6,000 representatives in the House of Representatives.
There's 435 guys that aren't very happy about that case, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, and we do have a couple calls on the line, Gary. We have Bob, if we can go to Bob. Bob, you have a question for Gary?
Yeah, getting back to the judge and the time it's going to take for his ruling, this could take anywhere from a week to a year or what? How long can she prolong giving us a ruling on this?
Well, I don't think it'll be immediately. I could be wrong. It could be a month or 2 months, but it should be somewhere around that time period. And it's a female judge. It's Judge Kimberly Mueller. And we expect we should have a ruling within 90 days. As you're right, sometimes the wheels of justice grind slowly. And, in fact, sometimes they even fall off.
Now, there is an avenue we have to go over that. Is there not somebody that we can actually complain to if we feel the judge is not acting in good behavior, so to speak?
Yeah, if you want to file a misconduct complaint, you would go to the Judicial Council, file with the clerk of the Ninth Circuit. But usually you keep these matters in court, and there are various remedies you can have, like mandamus, to force the court to rule. I don't think we'll have to do that. I think, I tell our supporters to be patient. We should have a ruling in the next month, 30 to 90 days. And hopefully she'll study this, and hopefully she'll reconsider, and hopefully she'll rule in our favor.
Yeah, and hopefully she'll
again, we pointed to that Shapiro case, and it's a very, very low bar. Congress thought these cases were so important that they required the three-judge court. And again, we're waiting to see what happens in the Gill case involving gerrymandering. The court may say something that, these cases have to be intervened in, and we have to come up with better remedies to serve the people.
Yeah, and what's so frustrating is she's already given us that three-judge court and then took it back. Hey, Gary, we have Jimmy on the line, so if we can go back to Jimmy, I think he had a question for you, and we lost him during the last break. So, Jimmy, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
All right, you have a question for Gary.
A real quick question. So if this doesn't – if everything gets dismissed through the Ninth Circuit Court, we will end up in the United States Superior Court, correct?
Supreme Court, yeah, Jimmy. Supreme Court.
Okay. Okay. Another thing is a lot of people are talking about this three-state split as a way to circumvent or put off our movement. What do you guys think about that? Is that like conspiracy theory? Or?
I was going to bring that up earlier because Gary mentioned that when he was talking. And so everybody out there knows three-state split has nothing to do with us. They actually wore Jefferson shirts and claimed to be part of Jefferson when they're collecting signatures for that. The three-state split does not address the representation problem. That's what we're trying to fix. We don't just want to get some counties out of California. We want to fix the representation issue also. The three-state split leaves the Bay Area in our state, or our Northern California state, which we're right in the same exact situation we are now, except that we no longer have LA's influence. We have strictly San Francisco and the Bay Area controlling all of our actions and all of our decisions and all of our laws. So,
right.
Absolutely,
I mean,
against
the
three-state split.
Are doing this on purpose to try to stall this movement?
No, I think Tim Draper just has some pie-in-the-sky ideas that he's going to, you know, be an emperor over, you know, another, you know, little United States of California. You know, I think he thinks that he can, he knows better and can split this up. And you know, of course, the people around him are telling him it's a great idea. But quite frankly, he tried to do a six-state split. He found out that California doesn't put anything on the ballot. They don't want to go on the ballot. So even though he gathered 20 or 30% more signatures than needed on the six-state split, they just disqualified as many as they needed to, and it never made the ballot. So now he tried a three-state split, and he actually gathered twice as many signatures as he needed to qualify, knowing that California would disqualify them. So the whole thing, it's a waste of time. It's muddy in the waters. It's causing a lot of confusion. There's some people out there like, hey, well, it's better than what we have now. I'm going to vote for it. The bottom line, it doesn't matter because it still has to go through the state legislature. They're not going to vote on it. And then it'd have to go to Congress. And whereas our state of Jefferson would probably pass Congress, this three-state split, there's no way in heck. Mitch McConnell, you know, and believe me, I think the Republicans do some awful stupid things, but Mitch McConnell would be voting himself out of the majority if he were to vote for to ratify this three-state split or to vote for it. So it's going nowhere. It's just muddy in the waters. It's a waste of time. But I personally, I don't think it's even anything to even be worried about.
Well, I agree with you, Chris. What it would do is just create three problems like the big one we have now regarding adding more representation. You have three states that had inadequate representation. But I do see a positive here is that the three-state initiative from Draper as well as CalExit is showing that California has problems and people are, you know, recognizing some of them. The question is, what is the solution? But this, both of these movements, and there's a few others. I think John Cox running for government, he has this neighborhood-like initiative that you would have 1,200 representatives in these neighborhoods, and they would be under the 80 assembly members and 40 state senators, which I don't think is a very good idea. What we should do directly, instead of having these limited reps with big staffs, get rid of their staffs and turn them into representatives in smaller districts. The government that governs least governs best. The best government is local government because one of the principles of the country was self-governance. To keep our liberty, we largely have to be independent, self-sufficient people, and government should be limited to those core functions like national defense, coining money, providing for the roads, post office, things of that nature. But we've gone crazy and created all these extra departments and administrative agencies that are so removed from the people that, you know, we've gotten to the point where our government, you get to a certain point and bigger is not only not better, bigger doesn't even work anymore.
Yeah.
People are coming to that realization. We have too much inane, insane process, and we don't need it. I think we could get rid of about 90% of our government.
Yep, I agree 100%. Hey, Gary, we have one other Gary on the phone. I don't know if we have enough time for a question, but, oh, nope, Gary's off the phone. Okay, that's good because Mr. Zimmerman, we could have used 3 hours today because it's been fascinating. You've given us a lot of information. I really thank you for that.
Okay, let me just close out and say that we need the people's support. We can't do this on our own, and there's a lot of really good people in Jefferson that have worked hard and have had the courage, but they need help. These lawsuits take money. And we need the support. So let's keep the hope alive and let's hope that her decision's in our favor. If it's not, we're not giving up the fight and we're going forward with the appeal. We made a good record and, the Ninth Circuit, if she rules against us, the Ninth Circuit we think will rule in our favor. If not there, the Supreme Court. This issue's time has come.
Yes, it has. Hey, Gary, thank you so much. Thanks for all the work you do and what you've been helping fight for us. We really appreciate that. And, yeah, like Gary said, the time has come.
4:51.
Do you tell us what to do? We don't know you, what you face. It's time to start a brand new.
state. The time has come for 51 in a Jefferson state of mind. And Jefferson state of mind, carved from lessons.
The news is brought to you on KCNR, Shasta, Redding, by Tobacco and Brew. Come see their newly remodeled store at 2143 Hilltop Drive in Redding, Tobacco and Brew.